Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter.
Everybody, this is the Nun. Welcome to Stu and the Nun. You are live on the air, Blog Talk Radio style. My main man, my brother from another land, Troy the Stu, is live from New York, but Buffalo, like the wing.
I am. Don't be, OPSEC, man. Don't be giving up my location. You could, I could be Syracuse. I could be Watertown by Fort Drum. I could be anywhere. I could be definitely not Albany. I could be in the heart of Times Square right now, coming to you live from 42nd and Broadway, but I'm not. Either way, yes, hey, everyone, welcome to another episode, episode 30 of Stu and the Nun. And Toby and I are so glad you're here joining us on this Tuesday night. You know, Toby, we didn't realize what we were doing when we started this show back up just a mere 30 episodes ago. When we said, let's do it on a Tuesday night, but it seems to be that Tuesday night is like the hot political night for the last month and a half, 2 months. I mean, there's either a debate or a primary or something. Man, we're always on the Tuesday night. Usually it's a debate.
We either planned extremely well or political situational awareness is lacking.
And we had a 1 in 7 chance to get it right, and we did.
We had a 1 in 7 chance. I know it's another big night in politics. Right now, our main man, Matthew Currier-Burton, is up there in Chicago, anxiously awaiting the results. I saw that he voted earlier today. Super excited to see the results from that. Things are really getting interesting. It's amazing that, you always expect a little bit of mud throwing and you expect some sabotage and you expect some, escalation of drama. But it really seems like we're just really at a friction point right now. And not just within parties, but as a nation. And it's just people, my Facebook feed, I'm just blessed with friends from all walks of life and corners of the country and, races, creeds, religions, and it's just really interesting to see how everyone's reacting to different things, and it's getting strong.
Yeah, and we've been lucky the last couple of Tuesdays, two Super Tuesday and tonight Super Tuesday 2, of coming on air right when things are happening. And let me tell you, you've heard it here first if you're not watching the news. They have called Florida for Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump, with 73% of the precincts reporting in, has picked up 45% of the vote, with Rubio like half of that. So it doesn't look like he has a chance. They have Rubio at 27%, Trump at 45%. Hillary is beating Sanders 65-32%. Florida in the bag for Trump, 99 winner-take-all state. So that is coming to you right now. Ohio, North Carolina, too close to call at the current point in time. So
yeah, no,
not
like,
a surprise there.
Yeah, not a huge surprise, but You would have thought Sanders would have done better in Florida. A lot of fixed incomes, a lot of people, you know, trying to, you know, be on his team. But that's also a lot of money. A lot of rich people here that like, don't touch my money.
Yeah, he was talking about free college. He wasn't talking about expanded Social Security and Medicare benefits. I think if he'd have been talking that, he probably would have picked up a few more in Florida. But they don't really down there, God's waiting room. They don't really care much about the free college. But
I did get, you know, some chuckles out of some of the memes this week, or some of the little GIFs, or, you know, the little, you know, video clips. And one was, you know, Hillary campaigning, saying, you know, she's been working this health care since 93 and 94, and she sure wishes she knew where, you know, Bernie Sanders was when she was doing that. And then that video cut, the video cuts to her, you know, in 93 and 94, you know, browbeating the people about health care, and Bernie Sanders is standing right behind her. And, yeah, you know, she thanks him for being there. Like, yeah, that's where he was. Also, she got a little testy on, the town hall where, you know, she was asked by the TV One host, you know, if she'd try to continue to run if she was going to be indicted. And she didn't react well to that and, you know, said an indictment was ludicrous. But it's, you know, it's possible. Like, the FBI don't investigate people unless they have a reason to. So it would be interesting to see how that is. You know, we got all this, you know, violence or protests, or some call it rioting, around, you know, Trump's rallies. You got a guy trying to rush the stage. I saw a really funny one where, you know, Trump reacts to Bernie Sanders sneaking up behind him and pinching him on the butt, you know, while he's on stage. You know, I thought that was a pretty good one. Good stuff that's going on. But also in the veteran community, the Wounded Warrior Project, you know, board of directors released their chief executive officer and their chief operating officer from duty, fired them, relieved them, showed them the door, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you, kind of stuff. And really interesting to see how, you know, the public outcry, that story started to come out, you know, is really starting to affect, you know, that organization. And the sad part is, you know, now they got to replace those people. And, you know, who do you do it with? You know, and a lot of people are calling for the founder of the Wounded Warrior Project, you know, to come back in. I don't know if that's possible at all, to be honest with you. I just don't know if that's possible.
Right.
But real interesting to see. And, you know, we've been talking about this for a couple of years. We've talked about how, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. They started off doing great things. But, you know, their name within the veteran community and the wounded community has been soiled for at least 5 years, horribly soiled for about 5 years.
Right.
And it's amazing how it took this long to come to light, but that's just because they're super litigious. And now, you know, now everyone knows who you are.
Yeah. Hey, I got some shocking news here that I'm very upset to have to report. I just picked this up. It appears that our good friend and past guest, Mr. Dave Bray, is no longer the front man for Madison Rising, having been replaced by Chandler Mogul. They're announcing Dave has moved on to other ventures, and they wish him the best. All the rest of the members are still there, but Dave Bray, a good friend of ours, pretty much the face and voice of Madison Rising since they've been in existence, is no longer involved with the band. I do not know what's going on, but
that is
upsetting news because I don't know. I don't know. I'm just kind of sitting here in shock reading that.
That's actually quite shocking because he founded the band. That's some wild and crazy stuff. All right, well, we got a great show tonight. We might as well get into it here pretty quickly. Longtime friend of both of ours, a guy by the name of Rick John, is coming on. Some of us like to call him Ricky. There's nothing better than a fine Southern gentleman having two first names. And we like to, you know, endearingly call him Rookie John, but he's a great guy that's done a lot in the veteran community. He's continuing to do a lot in the veteran community. He also is, you know, been crucial with helping some first responders with some stuff. But he is from the town of Shreveport in the Louisiana, and he is here with us tonight, and we are excited to have him because there's so much we want to get caught up on, because it's our understanding that you are running for Congress now.
Yeah, definitely right, in the 4th Congressional District in Louisiana.
Not the 1st, not the 11th, the 4th.
That's correct.
You've got to
be particular, make sure they vote in the right place.
That's
important.
I mean, you couldn't pick up a medal, you know, district, you know, like first, second, or third. You went straight for like, hey, it's not about the trophy, it's about the people, and I'm going to go for the 4th district.
That's right. You know, it helps when I live in the district too. I think that has something to do with being eligible to run.
Apparently, that's a requirement. Well, hey, let me tell our listeners a little bit about you, because you and I have been friends for what seems like a lifetime, and you're older, so it's closer to my lifetime. But no, I think we're about the same age. But no, man, I met you years ago, and just from the second I met you, I just always been impressed by you. One, you're the most debonair Southern gentleman out there, but two, your work in the veteran community is super impressive, and it's so unsung, and people, you know, really should know who you are, and that's one of the reasons why we want to have you on the show, is because Stu and I have witnessed, you know, all the great things you've done over the years, and you've never taken an ounce of credit for it. You've done it quietly and humbly. You've taught your family to do the same, but in the very beginning, I met you through the organization Soldiers Angels, and you were deeply involved with them, but you got involved with them, and Troy, if you'll indulge me for a few minutes, I just want to tell the story. So,
oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
So Hurricane Katrina, you know, hits the Gulf states and is devastating, right? Just tears it up. While that happens, the Louisiana State National Guard is deployed to Iraq. You know, the guys and gals that they count on to do the response locally, the fine citizen soldiers, you know, are not at home because they're in Iraq, you know, helping with the fight. And so they cut their tour short. They bring them home. It's really short notice, but they're extremely limited to how, like, they can maneuver them. So they basically bring them in, and they drop them in Louisiana, and they say, you got 72 hours to see your family, and then you need to report back for duty because we're going to work this hurricane. And there were guys and gals that didn't have the financial means to get tickets because they weren't where they were from. They didn't have the time to book the flights. And Ricky and, you know, they really got on it. They bought flights. They got hotel rooms. And Ricky, to ensure the guys that they couldn't get on commercial flights, they ended up actually chartering a plane. And I don't know if you've ever gone through the plane charter process. It's quite extensive, and it's definitely not cheap. And they ponied up and got the money and chartered this plane and treated this, you know, private carrier like a school bus and got all these guys and gals where they needed to go. And, you know, we're talking not like single-digit folks. We're talking double-digit folks and, you know, hotels, food, airfare, you know, so they could come back and, you know, leave where they were serving in Iraq to come and serve their communities. And most of which, their families were displaced, and they didn't even know where they were, and trying to track their families down. So Ricky, you know, that was his foray in his first forays in the veteran community, in the military community, and just like, one, I got to applaud you because like, that's some stellar stuff, and that's pretty badass.
Well, I appreciate it. You're too kind, and I'm not even a sponsor on your show, and you're treating me so well, and I appreciate it. And let me tell y'all, thank you first for having me on here. It's great to talk to both of you, and I know we haven't seen each other in a short while, and hopefully it won't be that much longer. But it was also with the Katrina stuff, you know, it wasn't just me. It was a great organization, and it was showed what teamwork with people could do. And with Soldiers Angels, it was so several, you know, so many moving pieces that just came together at one time. And I, you know, I just happened to be at the right place at the right time to be the one that could help facilitate that. But Patty and so many others were there to make sure that these soldiers that they met with their families, and you know, after being on in Iraq for so long, and that they met with their families and were able to reunite with them and just see that their families were okay, because they didn't, a lot of them didn't have any idea where their families were. So it is a it's certainly a testament, and like I said, I appreciate your kind words for me, but it's certainly a testament to just so many people, so many Americans that, you know, want to make sure that the military is taken care of and that they know that, you know, we've got their backs.
Well, I didn't mean to shortchange any of the efforts of the organization Soldier Angels, because, you know, that was the instrument that y'all used to make it happen. And, you know, and I apologize if it seemed like I took away
from
that
accomplishment.
Not at all,
Toby. Look, you fast forward a year, and you're one of the guys making it happen.
Everyone, you know, well, not everyone, but a lot of people know that I was deeply involved in Soldier Angels for several years, and it's, you know, the proudest time I'm – some of the proudest times of my life next to my military service. And, you know, the folks are, you know, just world-class folks, and they continue to be. But, man, like, what a way to get engaged, swiping a credit card and, you know, like, raising money and, you know, helping people get home. But, you know, that's what a lot of people forget, you know, like our military, you know, especially the National Guard, you know, like they're citizen soldiers. They serve at home. They do this stuff. And when they're not there because they're doing, you know, what the nation calls them or needs them to do, you know, these gaps need to be filled. And another great example of how the private sector and the nonprofit sector are able to, like, kind of swoop in and help out where there's shortfalls. And, you know, these are sometimes there are shortfalls within budget, sometimes there's shortfalls within programming, sometimes there's shortfalls in understanding. And I guess that's one of the reasons why, you know, a guy like you is starting to run for Congress, huh?
Yeah, it is. And you know, I look at what's going on in our country now, and I'm frustrated with it. You know, I think that we have a great country. It's probably the greatest country in the history of mankind. And, you know, but I think it's changed over the last 100 or so years from having a government that served the people to, you know, I think quite a few of us feel like we now serve the government and for its existence. And that frustration is evident with me and how I feel. And, you know, I've always been one. My grandfather used to always tell me, you know, if you sit around and you just complain and you don't have solutions, you're just whining. And I'm the type of guy, I like to go and if I'm going to complain about something, I like to try to find a solution. And so that was a big motivating factor for me to decide to step off into this and to do it.
Well, you know, it's no secret. Everyone that knows me and talks to me for more than 20 minutes knows that I say three things. One, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And two, real men reject passivity. And, you know, like people that cry and whine about stuff and don't have a solution or don't attempt to, you know, provide a solution, you know, how can you respect them? They're just crying. They're just whiners. And real men reject passivity.
Well, and I agree, and I think we all need to stand up for our country, and we need to stand up and stand forward and say, look, we're not, you know, we can gripe and we can Facebook and we can, you know, complain, but, you know, let's find some solutions, and let's see people who are trying to find solutions, and let's help them get out there to make a difference. And, you know, I mean, I think our government needs to get back to doing the things that it's supposed to do and do them well. In my opinion, it's trying to do too much, and it's not doing the things it's supposed to do and doing them well.
Well, speaking of things that they're not doing well, you know, we have a few minutes, and one of the things that I'd really like to bend your ear about is, you know, you've got involved, you're supporting some of the guys involved with the VA Truth Tellers, and, you know, as a, you know, you're talking to two guys that one that's in the process of getting set up in the VA system, one that's in the VA system with Troy, and it's a hot mess. And go ahead.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And, you know, again, we we've seen it when, you know, when we worked together and saw it from, you know, most of what we were seeing, I guess, at the time was the military hospitals, which seemed to be functioning very well. But once you get past that and you get into the VA, I think for a while it's been evident that there's a problem, and it's been kind of, you know, ignored, and it's, you know, that 800-pound gorilla of the VA that sits in the middle of the room, and nobody really can make it change. And these group of guys and women who are whistleblowers, I mean, I think they're doing a fabulous job of a courageous job of coming forward. It's not an easy thing when you have your family and your kids and your career on the line, and knowing that when you stand up and say something about what's going on, that, you know, that you stand to lose your career and your family's going to be, you know, possibility of the strife and the commotion in there is going to cause family problems. And so many of these people are courageously standing up and saying, hey, we're, you know, this isn't right. We've got to take care of our veterans. I mean, you know, I think the public, we as the public, we made a deal with all of you veterans and said, look, you know, you protect us and you serve your country, and here's certain things that we're going to do. And we've got to, I think as a country, we've got to live up to those promises.
Well, you know, I appreciate, you know, the sentiment that, you know, you guys, you want to uphold your promise, but it's not just a promise. You know, it's like we made that promise too, and that promise, you know, should be fulfilled on our end as well, as like helping make it better. But by helping it make it better, like, our family shouldn't, you know, be under pressure. There shouldn't be friction points where, you know, we could lose our job. We could, you know, face repercussions. And some of these guys and gals are like, you know, they're bravely stepping forward and, you know, kind of saying what's going on behind the scenes. Like, it's more than an 800-pound gorilla, right? This is the largest institution in the United States government.
My weight may have been down a little bit.
yeah, right. Like, there's no institution greater in our system than the VA system, and which, you know, there's all kinds of arguments out there. People are like, it's too big because it serves a smaller demographic versus other institutions that serve bigger demographics. But the reality is, you know, it has to serve, you know, a smaller demographic in a broader spectrum of ways. And that's tough. And anytime, you know, we're learning it, you know, there's a whole campaigns built on it. You know, big government makes small problems enormous. But it's really sad to see, like, how things, especially, I'm going to use the state of Louisiana. I remember going to Washington, D.C. with one of the finest men that you and I both know. He's just recently passed away, an amazing American hero, a Special Forces legend, and that's Colonel Henry Cook. I'd like to say retired when I announce his rank, but he actually is one of the very few guys they brought out of retirement. And can you imagine being like in your late 50s, early 60s, being brought out of retirement to run covert operations for a nation? That's the kind of, the level of badassery that Henry Cook was. And I went with him to Washington, D.C. to kind of watch the process. I was learning, you know, as a young, wet behind the ears guy trying to learn about the whole political process. And he took me up to D.C. and, you know, we walked the halls and we went lobbying. And, you know, his big thing is, like, after Katrina, there was no VA care in Louisiana, at least in the southern portion of Louisiana. And, you know, guys were being forced to go to Arkansas. They're being forced to go to Houston, Texas. And, you know, so just locally, it's a huge problem. Nationally, it's this monster. It's this absolute monster. And every day, you know, we're seeing people. You hear the short list, you hear the long list, people getting fired but maintaining their salaries and getting bonuses while they're on administrative leave. You know, there's a lot of people that are kind of pissed, but, you know, it's not just the civilian's responsibility, as we would say, to, like, fix this problem. It's all of ours problem. Like, when we see it, and some of these guys that you're involved with the truth tellers are really doing great stuff, standing up, being part of the process and helping it out. And we're actually going to have one on the show next week.
Yeah, you talking about Shea?
Yeah, I might be. It might be Shea.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely is a I think people like Shea are more common. They're more the commonality in the VA than the exception. It's just that you have this leadership that's unaccountable, and you know it squells and squashes other people coming forward, and so you know that's where people like Shea, when they're brave enough to come forward and say, hey, you know what you're doing is wrong. It's Shea's a veteran himself, and you know he tells me, he goes, all I've ever wanted to do is take care of my soldiers, and I think that plays a major part in what he's doing as a whistleblower and with the VA truth tellers. And, you know, and of course, I'll let him tell his story next week, and I think it's a very compelling story. But, there are problems, and, you know, there's great, wonderful people in the VA, and they just want to do their job, and they want to help our veterans, and they want to do the right thing. But it's just, you know, a lot of times they're not allowed to do their job, and it's just you run into these brick walls that are just a bloated bureaucracy.
Now, what is what is something, if you have something, you know, in mind, what is one of the things that you would really like to, you know, attack or approach if you get elected and in Congress you have the ability to write or co-sponsor legislation?
Well, like I was saying earlier, in one thing for sure would be the issues with the VA. I think we have to hold the leadership accountable. We have to find the Merit Protection Service Board is needs to be revised or done away with, and the leaders that are there that want to make differences have to be allowed to hold people accountable, and to that's the only way any organization can function. If you're not accountable, you're not going to do your job, and so that's one thing. But also, I think, you know, national security, you know, again, back to what I was saying a while back, is, you know, our government has certain things. If you read the preamble of our Constitution, it says, look, we're forming this government. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But we're forming this government to do certain things. And those are the things our government needs to make sure it does. National security is one. We need to make sure that, you know, our military is strong, make sure our military stays strong. We need to, you know, secure our borders. I mean, you know, that seems to be a hot topic now, and it seems to be one of those things that is should be a no-brainer. You know, if somebody knocks on your door at your house, you don't just open your door, leave it unlocked, or leave it open and let them walk in. You want to know who are you? Who are you coming into my house? And we need to do the same thing with our country. We just have gotten away from doing that. I mean, I think we have laws in place to take care of that if we would enforce them, but we're not. And for too long, we've allowed people to, you know, come into our country, and we don't know who they are, where they're coming from, or what they're doing.
Like me.
Yeah, but, you know, the Canadians don't seem to be causing much problem. But, you know.
Well, yeah, honestly, what are you up to? We don't know what you're up to. Are you taking jobs from Americans?
Well, that's
but I mean, how does it make somebody like you, Toby?
I could have another American on here hosting this show, but no, I got a Canadian taking a jab.
No, but like that's why now I'm an entrepreneur, because I'm not taking an American job. I'm creating a job for myself within the American dream system. So every time like someone like gives me a hard time for being here, you know, I was in the Army, which is a performance, you know, promotion based institution. Right, you know, it's like, you want to have my job, do it better than me. If I want your job, I'm going to do it better than you. I got out, I became an entrepreneur, and that's like, I'm not stealing an American's job. In fact, I'm creating jobs by, like, not entering into an institution. I'm, like, creating my own enterprise and then employing Americans in doing such. So, like, I'm on the home team here, guys. You know, a lot of people, I might be a sleeper cell, you know, in terms of like enterprise, but you know, I'm definitely here, like trying to, you know, put in and not take away.
Thanks a lot for that term. We just picked up some new listeners out of DC, I'm sure, with that little keyword there.
on our metrics, you know, we can always tell when the NSA, when they start listening in.
Hey, nope.
Does that mean I need to go now?
No, you're good.
Yeah, you're good.
But you know, Toby, you've earned it. You've earned your citizenship more than most of us that, you know, were given it at birth. And you know, and I mean, I think it's only fair to people like you too that, you know, we make sure we have control over what we're doing with that. You can't,
well,
you know,
I appreciate you saying that, you know, and I definitely, you know, believe that my service earned me the opportunity to stay here. But I also believe that, you know, this great social contract that, you know, Hobbes and Locke spoke about, you know, back in the day, you know, is important, you know, and I'm entering into that social contract. I'm entering into it, you know, and part of, you know, coming here is becoming here. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I think, you know, in terms of immigration, a lot of times gets lost. You know, I saw Trump, you know, cut to a guy at one of his rallies up in Ohio earlier today. And, you know, they brought the guy up on stage and, you know, the guy was wearing a shirt, you know, legal immigrant for Trump. Now, I'm not saying this is an endorsement for Trump, but what I'm saying, this is an endorsement for any legal immigrant that came here and did similar to either what I did or many other people that took different paths to citizenship than I took, but, you know, did it by the book. It's not hard to come to this country. In fact, it's tremendously easy. And, you know, coming in legally with a visa, doing the right applications, finding a job, doing it right, you know, going to school, staying here, getting an extension. Like, there's so many ways that you can do it legally without, you know, having to enter into, you know, basically, well, it's a criminal enterprise if you enter into it illegally, and do it right. This truly is the land of opportunity, and, you know, to try and shortchange that, like, your sentiment earlier, like, you don't just leave your door open and hope, you know, no one comes in. You know, you don't welcome someone into your house. Like, I wouldn't let a vacuum cleaner salesman, you know, I wouldn't, you know, let, you know, someone, you know, speaking to me about, you know, my Lord and Savior into my house without, like, properly vetting them first, even though he is my Lord and Savior. I'm careful about that. So, like, that sentiment you said earlier, it resonates, and I appreciate you saying that. Because with that, you know, also comes the guys and gals that are here not to do well, not to promote enterprise, not to, like, put in the social contract. They're the guys that are here to, like, steal and destroy, you know, like ISIS. You know, they enter through, you know, non-conventional means. They brag, you know, it's in the Quran, you know, to utilize any way that you can to enter into another's kingdom. You know, they do that. And, you know, that's another reason why we have to, like, seal our borders. We have to be more conservative, more restricting on who comes in and who comes out. But there's still plenty of ways to do it legally. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you know, if you're a bad guy, typically it'll show up. Now, in the case of San Bernardino, like, you know, we could have done a little bit of work there. And in fact, our good friend Uncle Jimbo would have said that we didn't have to do a lot of work there to figure out that that was not a good deal in terms of bringing that person into the country. So,
well, and I agree. And is it Uncle Jimbo or our friend Tim that keeps telling us we're supposed to call him Daesh?
It might be Tim.
And I don't know if it's supposed to have the same redneck accent that I have when you say it or not, but I agree with that sentiment, and I think that, you know, we've got to get put processes in place to properly vet the people coming in, especially if they're coming in from a country where, you know, unfortunately there are some countries with very evil people in them, and they want to do us harm. And, you know, and some people want to, you know, say, oh, evil, and that, you know, are there really evil people? Yes, I think that, you know, especially guys with your experience, I mean, you've been around those people, and you've had to deal with them, and you know, there are, we have to be mature about it and understand there are truly people that want to hurt our people and destroy our way of life, and to allow them just to come into the country, you know, without taking the proper precautions, I think, you know, we're not living up to, you know, our obligation to our society.
Troy,
Thank you. I wasn't sure. I was starting to wonder, like, man, this is going to be a good Toby and Rick show. But you guys were on a roll, so I'll let it go. That's all right. I was watching the news and keeping tabs on all the breaking news. Anyways, Rick, I don't want to get back to you about something. And I don't know, it feels weird calling you Rick because I've known you as Ricky for so long, but is it Rick or Ricky or maybe some other?
To a lot of things.
I probably called you a few other things at a bar in D.C. time or two. I don't know.
And I've said yes. Hey, what? But when we had that discussion, my wife said, you know what? I call you Rick. Your grandparents called you Rick. Your family calls you Rick. You're going to be Rick. And I said, yes, ma'am.
Yes. That's good. I can tell you adapt and learn lessons well. And one of those is to say yes, ma'am, to the wife, for sure.
It's taken 20 years, 22 years, but I'm getting there.
There you go. We see in the current election season quite a bit of vitriol and hatred and everything going on. I know yours is a different scale, but taking it down to the scale of what you're running for in Louisiana, have you seen or heard snide comments or mudslinging or have you been preparing for it just in case it does happen if it hasn't yet?
Well, you know, I'm not. That's something when I was when we're putting together our campaign team and speaking with my political consultant when I was hiring them, and you know, I told him, I said, look, I'm not a negative campaign type of guy. I mean, I think there are people out there and there's consultants out there that's how they run a campaign. It's a path of destruction, and I'm not that type of person, and I'm not going to run that type of campaign. I mean, I'm gonna take up for myself. And I'll make sure that, you know, I'm not going to be pushed around by any stretch of imagination. But I think that, you know, what Americans, what we need is we need leadership. We don't need destruction. We've had too much destruction the last few years and too much friction, and we need people to lead us. And I think that, you know, I'm hoping we can avoid a nasty campaign, you know, with personal insults and you know, that type of vitriol being thrown around. But, you know, it's not going to come from me. And, you know, like I said, I'll defend myself, but I'm not going to promote that. And I think we've got a pretty good group of candidates, and hopefully that, you know, everybody will take that high road. That's one thing that people have told me with the group of people running. They go, you know, it's kind of a shame that you're all running in the same race because it's a good group of guys. Now, you know, when first shots are fired, who knows what's going to happen?
Right, right. You know, and that's so. Are you running? I'm not tuned in with your race, but is there an incumbent, or is someone retiring or leaving office, and it's a green field for everybody, or what's the situation?
Yeah, it's an open seat. The current congressman is a gentleman named John Fleming, and he is running for the Senate. I don't know how much you've follow Louisiana politics, but David Vitter was our senator, and he ran for governor and lost that race and decided he wasn't going to run for his Senate seat in November again. So Congressman Fleming decided to run for that seat, and so it's an open seat, which will, you know, which again, as with most open seats, you know, it's going to draw some candidates.
Right, and it almost seems like, I mean, that's I don't want to say fair, but it seems like that's a little bit more even playing field, right, versus someone that's kind of notched. Because sometimes people are like, oh, he did good, I'll just leave the guy in there. But this is everyone running is all going to have to prove themselves, right, and convince voters that they're the right one to step in their next. It seems like it's a little bit easier. It seems like it'd be easier of a race to run.
Well, I don't know if it's easier but it's easier than running against an incumbent. I mean, I think like you said, my feelings on that is when you're running against an incumbent, you're asking the voters to fire someone. And you've got to give them a very good reason to get rid of the person. And people can be disgruntled, but, you know, they'll go, well, you know, I'm disgruntled, but, I've supported him before, and why am I going to get rid of him? And right. So, yeah, in that sense, I think just, you know, the race is, it's easier for new blood to come in that sense.
Yeah. Now, is getting into politics like this and something you've been thinking about for a while, or did this just kind of – did you just kind of wake up one day and realize, hey, it's my turn and I need to do something? Or has this been something kind of a passion of yours for any amount of time?
Well, it's certainly not a passion. I'm not a politician. I haven't lived my life as a politician. I haven't, done that, and you know, I've kind of just been living my life. My wife and I are raising our kids and working and going forward with that, you know, trying to do some good in the community and you know, like with things like Soldiers Angels. But I mean, to say it's something, I mean, I'm an attorney, that, you know, you live the law, that's what we do. So I mean, I've always paid attention to what was going on. I had looked at this race years ago when Fleming ran and just had said, well, you know, it's not my time and my children are too young, and you know, it just wasn't the right fit. And when this one came up, I looked at it again, and you know, I again, like I say, I complain. You know, I can sit in front of my children and complain about what's going on in the world, as you know, you try to teach them and show them what's going on and lessons, and that's, you know, just kind of the perfect storm. And I said, you know, I'm going to do it. I was motivated to do it and decided to do this.
Okay, all right. And if it doesn't, do you think if you know, if you don't win and you don't get to secure the seat, do you think it's something he may stay involved with for a while? You think he may look at other political opportunities to try to give back and make a difference to your community and the country?
I don't know. It's so early in this race, and you know, I've helped friends with races before, but it's certainly different being the candidate. And you know, it's not. I'm not looking to make a career out of politics, and I just feel that this is a very important position. I think it's an honorable position, and I know not everybody feels that way, but I mean, you know, we have a great country and we have a great constitution, and this is one of the jobs that this constitution, I mean, it's set up by the constitution, and so I would be proud and honored to be able to do it. I can't say that it's something I would, if we weren't successful, if it's something I would go, well, let me see what the next thing is. I would think I'd probably just get back to working and get back to, you know, being a father and being a husband.
Okay. Is there anything in your life, in your past, that you think has helped you prepare you for this kind of challenge or unique experience of trying to convince voters to that you're the right choice and you're here for their best interests, and then of course everything goes along with running against other candidates. Do you feel like there's anything that's helped you prepare for that?
Well, man, again, being a lawyer, I think it's kind of comes natural to represent people and representing your district. Just life experiences. I be honest, the work we did with Soldiers Angels was very influential in my life, and seeing young men. And some that may young men and women, and some that may not have been so young, that gave and give so much to our country, and it inspires you to say, look, you know, that's not the path I took in life, but I need to give back in some way, and I need to be involved in some way. And so, you know, I mean, those are the type of things, just, you know, life experiences, working, you know, with the law as an attorney. I mean, working with Soldiers Angels, we're in and out of D.C. all the time, and working in that environment. And so I would like to think that those experiences have made me and prepared me for this.
Yeah, selfless service, right? And that's what being an elected representative should also be, selfless service. So I would agree that's probably some of the best experience you could have, because you'll stay grounded.
Yeah, and you know, that's something people ask me, go, are you moving your family to D.C.? I'm like, no, I'm not moving my family. My family lives here. And I know it would be it's a tough to, you know, transition back and forth, but if you're representing a district, I think you actually have to show up at it every now and then to know what's going on. And you know, those are the type of things that I feel are important, to make sure you're representing your constituents. And you know, it's a way of giving back, and it's a way of being involved and you know, of stepping forward and saying, hey, you know, let me help out.
You know, it's on one of those Soldiers Angels trips to D.C. that I can't remember if you were with me or not, and I know Colonel Cook was with me for sure. I learned about community coffee and the importance of community coffee in the Louisiana life. And, you know, we were there in Vitter's office, and he had an amazing legislative assistant on policy, especially military policy, but he was actually a Marine Corps officer that had just returned from deployment, that was on a fellowship with him. And, he was a big supporter there, and, you know, we drank some great community coffee, and he was the king of the early morning meetings, which I'm a big fan of. And you know, it was neat to go and actually witness that process up there in D.C. But you know, it was Soldiers Angels that, you know, we were up there with, and just thinking back, you know, I've just been you know, in my mind, you know, you've made me a little bit, you know, I don't want to say melancholy, but, you know, just really kind of thinking back about some of the things that we were able to accomplish there. And in terms of, you know, your time, your span, I mean, you just left Soldiers Angels and rotated off the board in last summer, 2015. So in your time, almost a decade, well, a decade worth of service with that organization, I mean, what, probably in upwards of $80, $90 million that you were part of the stewardship of. You saw 5,000 wounded warriors get adaptive technologies in the form of laptops, several hundred thousand in worth of several hundred thousand individual care packages sent overseas to our troops, medical support sent to our troops in forward combat support hospitals, in addition to Longstuhl, Germany. Man, like, the impact that you played, I mean, is actually, I'm just sitting here reflecting on it going, holy crap, like, you know, I only spent 4 or 5 years there. You spent twice as long, and, you know, what happened on your watch is impressive. And you and the most gracious doctor ever, you know, one of my favorite pediatrician, even though, like, she doesn't work on any of my kids, I wish she did. If we lived there, there was no one I would trust with my children more than Angela. But, I mean, you guys as a family have just really put out into that community, and I'm just really thinking about it right now and reflecting back going, holy smokes, like, that's a lot of money, it's a lot of support, and that's a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of volunteer hours, a lot of unpaid, you know, this was all volunteer for you and your family, and, you know, you guys sacrificed a lot of time, a lot of money. I was super impressed by you, and thanks again for that, not just on behalf of, like, me, but, you know, I got the pleasure of seeing, you know, some of those guys getting those laptops. I got the pleasure of seeing, you know, some of those guys getting those medical supplies. And your efforts in that, you know, just really changed my life. And I sometimes forget, you know, like, in our lives, you know, these things and what makes them possible. And you were integral in that. So, like, hey, thanks, bro. thanks, bro.
You're welcome, bro. But, you know, it and guys like you, you know, I mean, we're an inspiration, and you know, my wife as well, putting up with me doing it and being gone and you know, and not working as much as I probably should have because I was doing Soldiers Angels stuff. I mean, again, it's a family effort, and it's a you know, a group effort to get these things done. And I'm just proud to have been involved with it, and I think fortunate to have been led down that path to be able to be involved in it.
Yeah, no, it's, I take notes. Well, you remember me with my little moleskin books. I always use them. But I was just like, just taking a quick little snapshot of that decade of time from when you started from helping guys get flights out of Katrina to, you know, last summer. You know, like, that's a long period of time, and that's awesome. I'm super excited that you're taking your service to another step. I mean, and that's really what it is. This is another form of public service. Your families, both you and your wife's family, you know, have been integral in, you know, the enterprise and, you know, the downtown development at Shreveport. I've had the pleasure of, you know, being a patron at several of your wife's family's restaurants, and, you know, lots of great stuff that, you know, y'all are doing down there. It's a beautiful town. It's a beautiful district. I really appreciate the sentiment, how you said that, you know, if you're going to represent it, you should show up in it. And I know that you don't show up in it, you live in it. And I really enjoy how you said that. Tell our audience where they can find you on social media. You know, for those listening in Louisiana, how they can learn more about you, your campaign. You got some fundraisers coming up. You know, anything you want to tell us, we're happy to hear it.
Okay, yeah. Well, website is rickjohnforcongress.com. It's a little long, but once you put it in, it'll keep coming up, and so you can just keep clicking on it all you want. You can find some you know, a little bit about my bio on there. Of course, there's the donation page because, you know, money is necessary to run the race. And it's probably the most difficult part of this is asking people to donate to you. But it's what makes these, you know, our political world turn as far as being able to get your message out. You can have the best message in the world, and if you don't have, you know, donations to get it out on TV and to get it out in media. Social media, we're still in the beginning stages of that. We'll have Rick John on Twitter, and then we'll have, you know, a Facebook page, a Rick John Facebook page as well for Congress. And so we're still working on that, but that will all flow through the website, and you'll be able to find that information. I'm hoping within the next week or 2 weeks we'll have that up. And you know, and again, got hopefully having one of our friends that we talked about earlier will be helping me with that, and I'm excited to again draw upon, you know, so many great people that I've met through my years with Soldiers Angels that have stood up and said, yeah, I'm gonna help you. And so, you know, we're moving forward with all of those, and our campaign team is great. Looking forward to it, and you know, like I said, we've got RickJohnForCongress.com, and you know, kind of all flows through that.
So Troy, you know, I didn't get a chance to fill you in, but no, like he's bringing in some social media heavyweights. You know, he's bringing in guys like Tom Amenta. You know, like he's this is going to be a good campaign. We're really excited about it, and should be good.
That's awesome. Hey, you know, it's all in who you know, and it's good having friends in low places, right?
Well, and they've got me too. So, guys, I just want to tell y'all, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you having me on and letting me talk and, you know, tell people about myself and having this forum. It's certainly appreciative. Your friendship's always been, you know, I've always appreciated it, and I'm a better person for it, having known you two for sure.
Oh, dude, thank you. More than kind. That's too flattering. No, I mean, we'll be tracking. We're totally stoked. We need people like you, of your integrity and character. That's what it's going to take to turn things around. It's not, you know, it's going to take more than one, because you can only have a sphere of influence so big. But you know, maybe that'll start a chain reaction. We need people like you and Duncan Hunter and others in there that are standing on principles and values, and not other motivators.
Well, and you know, motivating not to let you down too.
Well, you know, Rick, you know, I'm going to start calling you Rick now, because you said, you know, people outside inside the family call you Rick, and I want to be family. So, you know, we need men of action. We really do need men of action. I've always known you to be one, and I thank you for it. Real men reject passivity. Thank you for doing this, and we'll continue to support you and follow the campaign as it goes. But thanks for coming on. I hope everyone paid attention. Near the end of the show, we'll regurgitate, reiterate, and restate where you can track Ricky. Thanks for being on, as always.
Thank you for having me. Certainly appreciate it.
Troy, you know, like another great example of a fine American, you know, out there trying to do good things and not actually trying, but succeeding and continuing to do so. It's awesome to see people serving in different capacities and becoming leaders, not only in the community, but potentially on a national level. Exciting stuff.
Yeah, it is. Like I say, you know, it's I've said this to someone before. It may have been on a show. You know, you look at our founding fathers, they weren't, except for maybe one, Benjamin Franklin, they weren't really professional politicians. They were doctors and lawyers and farmers and businessmen and stuff like that. And that's what we need. I mean, I'm all for term limits on congressmen and senators. We need people from society to step up and do their turn in service. And I couldn't think of a better person to start turning that around for Louisiana for sure.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, that's exactly right. You know, when someone from within the community steps up, and it's not like, oh, my granddaddy, you know, has this name, therefore I feel compelled to utilize it. No, like when someone that's been down in the trenches working with folks, doing good things, you know, sees something, knows that they can make a difference. I mean, that's the guy, you know, or gal that you want, right? So that's great stuff.
Yep. So all right, we have a few minutes left.
It appears.
Nope, go ahead.
Rubio has dropped out.
Yes, he has dropped out. He is suspending his campaign, and they are calling Kasich now as winning Ohio, so I think he's going to stay in it. He may be the choice. I mean, this guy, if you think about McCain before, was McCain was broke and came back and won it for the party, for the GOP. Kasich was all but out, and as now, I mean, he may be who the GOP establishment gets behind because they don't like Cruz. They don't like Trump. I don't know, man.
Like, I just can't get past the vision of him, A, like giving a State of the Union, or B, like speaking to somebody else. You know, the dude has the worst mannerisms. Like, you know, what was that movie? Talladega Nights. Or Talladega Lights, you know, the legend of Ricky Bobby. He's like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Like, that's the first thing that comes up, you know, when, like, Kasich is talking. I'm like, this guy's doing crazy stuff. He, like, gives the weirdest faces. And, well, on one hand, like, comedians will have, you know, 4 years worth of awesome material. But,
well,
at
this point,
I'm not sold on the guy.
Yeah, whoever's left, it doesn't matter who gets in eventually, they're going to, comedians and late night talk show hosts are going to have all kind of fodder. I mean, cause are going to be the best. But hey, we got about 4 minutes, 3.5 minutes left. I'm going to give you first dibs on our bald man rants and let you run with it.
No, mine's really simple. You know, I'm going to circle back to where we were talking earlier in the evening with the Wounded Warrior Project. I'm really excited that, you know, they got called out, they got put on the carpet, their feet were to the fire. I was watching the CBS Morning piece with Odie Arno, who, you know, a combat wounded guy that's the chairman of the board. He might have a, you know, famous person with this name, Odie Arno, related to him. But I was really impressed that they continued that pressure. And, you know, they brought up things about how, you know, he said 80 cents on the dollar goes to wounded warriors. And they were like, well, are you counting the fact that direct mailers are part of that? And he said, yes. And, you know, it's like direct mailers aren't raising awareness. And nothing pisses me off more than an organization that says, hey, we're here to raise awareness. Like, thanks for telling me that there's a problem and you have no plan to do anything about it. Thanks for telling me there's a problem and you want me to give you money so that I can continue to do nothing about it. And anytime someone says, like, raising awareness is making a difference, I'd point to the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. I'd point to, like, any organization that, you know, is, like, doing something for the purpose of awareness and not solving the problem. Just solve the problem. You know, this is America. This is the 21st century. We have amazing technology. We have the brightest minds in the world. If we put our minds to it and we put our dollars to it, and not in jest and not notionally, we can accomplish the most amazing things. And that's why I live in this country, and that's why I believe in America, because we can do that. And I know that there's a young man or young woman in middle school today that's going to solve these problems, and we need to continue to encourage them. And it's not by raising awareness. It's by, like, giving them the opportunity. And that's all I got.
All right. Yeah. Okay, got a minute and a half. So two things. One, I want to I saw the – the announcement was good that they fired those two guys. I saw Odierno on O'Reilly Factor, and I was less than impressed. O'Reilly hammered him pretty good, and he was very. I got a very weaselly, slimy, political kind of. He wouldn't answer any questions directly. When they announced those two getting fired, I said, okay, this is the start. Maybe they can turn this around and make this a reputable integral. You know, an organization with integrity again. But what I saw from him, they're going to have a hard time convincing me and probably a lot of other Americans and veterans that these guys are ready to do something, because I just don't get the warm fuzzy.
Amen.
So my real rant is about these gaffes, right? They act like they're Joe Biden mess ups when he drops F bombs on hot mics and stuff. But when Hillary sits there and says that she lost nobody in Libya. When that is the monkey on her back, besides the server on her back, and she can sit there and look people, dial hundreds of people, or look a camera in the air and say, we never lost anyone in Libya, knowing not only did she lose an ambassador, but three other great Americans, just turns my stomach that the American, anyone in this country with two inches of forehead and half a freaking mind can still vote for her. It just astounds me. That's my bald man rant with just 10 seconds left. So,
well, thanks everyone for tuning in. Thanks to our guest, Rick John out of Louisiana. And good night, everybody.
Good night.